Hey, everybody. Golf show with a couple of golf guys, Brett Gunning and Sam McKee, hot off the heels of an incredible finish at the RBC Canadian Open. Sammy, always good to be back, always good to be basking in the afterglow of our beautiful national championship.
Honestly, buddy, I don't want to be too self-serving right off the top, but here we go. Fabulous to just see you, you know? We used to spend, before you got the, you went to the morning show and got all the fame of being the morning show host on Sports at 590 The Fan. We used to play golf together a couple times a week. We had all these things that we used to do together, and we just never see each other. So to spend a full day with you walking around beautiful TPC Toronto at the North Course there, we had a blast. So it was nice just to see you, bud, and it really felt good to reconnect. So there you go. How's that for some self-serving off the top?
That's wonderful. And honestly, like, is there a better day for us to reconnect?
Nope,
we get
there
to
isn't.
Talk about all our favorite hockey jerseys that we see.
Yes.
We get to talk about all the wonderful golf. It's at a place. We've played so much golf. So, yeah, just honestly, picture-perfect day for a finish, picture-perfect day for us. And it was great, great, great to see your mug. Okay, RBC Canadian Open, another one is in the books. First one at TPC Toronto. We'll get into the course a little bit. I did just kind of want to talk about, and, you know, we did this a little last year, but it's crazy how the feel is still different. Nick Taylor winning this tournament, and I don't know, maybe 10 years from now we get away from that, we're not thinking about it anymore, but Nick Taylor winning this tournament has kind of forever changed the feels of how it is. It's like the 4-minute mile has been broken. I saw it and I now can believe it. And normally hope is a terrible thing in sports. Like, you and I, we love our Leafs and hope every year, and we know what happens. But now that I've seen the Nick Taylor come through in the clutch, and he's the logo and he threw the putter, I always go into this, if there's Canadians in the mix on Sunday, wondering, why not again? Why not us? And it's just nuts to have that feel as opposed to how this thing felt pre-Taylor, PT, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And even on Saturday afternoon at one point, there was, I think there was four Canadians in the top 10, and it really felt like we were kind of trending towards potentially another sort of Nick Taylor, well, not moment, but a Nick Taylor-esque winner, another Canadian. And yeah, like, I just think what it comes down to, Gunnar, is when we would talk about the RBC Canadian Open before it was this era of golfers, it was like, yeah, if Mike Weir doesn't win it, or, you know, Stephen Ames doesn't have the best week of his life, it's not going to happen. And now it feels like when you go into it every year, you have a legit shot of four separate guys to win this thing. And that's not even to mention Richard Lee, who had a fantastic week at the RBC Canadian Open as well. It just, it really feels that maybe your feeling is, there's just a bunch of sick golfers from Canada, and huge credit to Golf Canada for the development programs they've put in place, and there's more guys coming and more women coming. It's just Canadian golf is sick. So you have more of a chance every time here, and we followed around Nick Taylor. And I got to tell you, looking back and seeing what the final score was, we followed him all day on Sunday. He's probably kicking himself because he definitely could have got it to 18. There's a couple putts that didn't drop for him, a couple mistakes here and there, but he was right in that golf tournament. But yeah, like, to your point, there's lots of good golfers that are from Canada. So it just feels like we have the potential to have more Nick Taylor moments.
Yeah, I right, it was just kind of perfect timing on my part. Right as I get there, like, I could not have walked any more into it. You just see Hadwin and Pendrith walking down, and this is, you know, this isn't the final pair. I'm not trying to overstate what it is, but this is among the 10 last groupings you see, and it's Adam Hadwin and Taylor Pendrith, and it's almost an afterthought is the way you look at it, which is nuts. We would never have had an afterthought. We would have thought it was so cool that these guys were playing together, and now there's just so many of them. So yeah, let's get into the Taylor a bit. You know, you and I, we did that was our maiden voyage together. We decided to follow around Nick Taylor. What a great call.
And Shane Lowry,
us.
Because he was leading the tournament at the moment.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it helps when Shane Lowry's going nuts as well, and that's a great pairing to follow. Yeah, Taylor, man, as up and down a day as there is, I mean, huge putts. There's the one at the rink hole that falls, and then, you know, huge putts the other way that are lipping out. Yeah, it was a day of the best version of Nick Taylor could have, maybe not easily because it did go to a playoff, but win that golf tournament, and the worst version of him, if you just take the guy that was lipping out putts, he's not sniffing the top 10 like he was. So it's kind of crazy, the two versions of him that we saw yesterday.
Yeah, and I think the 13th hole for me was the turning point. And, you know, we can get a little bit more into the course later on in the podcast, but 13 at TPC Toronto, the north there, is normally plays as a par five, and it's a hard par five. Like, it's a really, it's a meandering long hole with this big hump that's greenside. And you and I were grumbling about it being a par four, and when we were standing on the tee, and then Nick Taylor hits a gorgeous drive, was less than driver, if I remember correctly. I think he hit a three metal or whatever it was. And then he darts one, what was it, 6 feet on that hole, Gunner?
Yep.
And he has a 360 lip out on that hole where everybody thought it was going to drop. You know, you really, and the rink hole, you could hear the rumblings of, we want Nick. And you thought he was going to be strolling over there coming off of a birdie. But it just lipped out. And for me, that really felt like the turning point of his round where, you know, I know he makes birdie in the next hole, but if you add that one on top of there, then you're in a different position and you're really feeling like you're bearing down. It eventually comes unglued on 17 when he ends up making double on a horrible short-sided shot. But I thought he was right in the tournament. I've spent a lot of time watching Nick Taylor up close over these years at the tournament because I always feel like he's one of our best chances, obviously. And he's a great player. He made a couple mistakes yesterday, but I really enjoyed watching him and Shane Lowry. And, you know, Shane Lowry's short game is ridiculous. He had a couple short missed putts, too, where he easily could have been the mix with Sam Burns and Ryan Fox. But it was definitely a fun group to follow yesterday. And to see the support for Nick Taylor was fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it's kind of crazy how he started out in this position. Like, I mean, you know, it's not something that's front of mind for everybody, but you go back, to 19-year-old Nick Taylor. He's the number one ranked amateur in the world. So he obviously started, mm-hmm. like, as the loftiest of these guys. But then, you know, Mac Hughes is ripping off wins, and Corey Connors is the most consistent guy. And then he has the win 2 years ago, and it's like he's all the way back to the top of the pecking order. You know, you mentioned it there, watching Lowry was special. I want to be clear, I'm not killing either of these guys for this. It is so remarkable, and I don't know, it's not that we've never picked up these things watching on TV, but you do just see it more when you're up close and personal, and, you know, really close and personal, like we get at the RBC Canadian Open, of the body language change these guys from hole to hole. And, like, Taylor and Lowry both, Lowry seemed to be wearing it a little more because he didn't have, you know, 30,000 people screaming at him every time he took a step on the golf course, although he's very popular in his own right. But that was the thing that was nuts to me, just watching those guys. It's like, if you had to close your eyes for every golf shot, you'd be able to know how it went just by looking at him a millisecond afterwards.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just Shane had a couple really short putts missed earlier in the round. I think it was on 12 or 11 that he missed a really short one for birdie. Like, he definitely, you could see the auto checkout from him. Like, you could see physically what hole it was that he kind of started to check out. And so, we ended up checking out on them and, you know, hung around for Sam Burns for a couple holes because you could tell pretty quickly that they weren't locked in. But it was fun for the first, I would say, 14 after the rink hole was when it was really, that was kind of the end of it.
Yeah, Ray right? Cole was the last gasp there. Yeah. He gets that putt, and it's like right up against the fringe.
Really
not
tough
an easy
putt
at all. Oh, we're gonna talk. We're gonna murder the U.S. Open in some ways in cold blood later on. But let me just commend the other side of the equation: a real deal par three that you would play wherever you play. 144 yards. You don't have to tip it out to 8,000 yards on a par three just to make somebody feel good. They went for the fireworks. I don't think we had the one. I feel like I would have seen that if we had it.
There was no one.
So, hey, they tried it. I do not begrudge them at all. Look, life is about the variety of spice, and golf courses are the exact same way. So I love them returning to the game's roots and asking these guys to hit a wedge close on a par three. So good job to the rink hole there.
Yep, that was awesome. And really cool to hear the rumblings of "We want Nick. We want Nick." Like, it was a real amphitheater scenario there where you go under the underneath of it and you could hear them erupt when they go into the rink. It was really cool. I just, you know, I'm a bleeding heart Canadian. I think the rink is one of the coolest ideas that they've ever had at this tournament. And it just, 14 was a really good amphitheater and a great vantage point because it's a downhill par three, right? So you can see all the way down the hill there. Like I said to tournament director Ryan Paul when we had him on last week, not to brag, but my co-host made a birdie at that hole, so he'll always have that. I believe you beat Shane Lowry on that hole on Sunday, so very good for you. So great job there. But I really hope that, I guess they have to keep that as the rink hole for next year when it's there, right? Like, I don't think there's another hole really that you could change it. I don't think you'd have any reason to. I think that's just a perfect hole to have it at.
No, I was a little skeptical of the build out there. Like, it's such bad take by me, but it is where my mind immediately goes. Like, I don't know, you tried to make it too good. You better stop. Don't fly too close.
Make
to
it
the
better,
sun.
More.
Honestly, like, yeah, just a grandstand 15 stories tall around the rink hole. Who says no? Shane Lowry is the answer to that.
Yes.
He did not have the best of time there. It was awesome for Taylor. I'm like you. I love it. In years past, I have just kind of set up shop. More a Saturday thing than Sunday of just kind of setting up shop in the rink. And
Yep. You
hear the, oh, Canada going back and forth. And, you know, guys are throwing on jerseys. It's awesome. You and I talked to the tournament director, Rand Paul, about this. Happy to be so wrong. Happy it's worked out so well.
And the boys are just greased there. And, like,
Yeah. You
know, I'm sure there are a few sunburn hangovers today at the office. You know, it was pretty hot there yesterday. Not a lot of shade at the rink. The Cottage Springs, the Sleemans were absolutely flowing through there. I can imagine there's a few horse boys at work today on their 9 a.m. Zoom call. We're like, yeah, thanks for the, you know, all the spreadsheets are coming in nicely. Like, it's there's a couple guys that are a little hungover after that one.
Nothing better than seeing a guy at the office on a Monday, just red face is all hell, trying to act like nothing happened. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. We all had a nice restorative weekend here. Yeah, we could see through that a mile away. Mac Hughes, don't need to belabor the point here, but just, hey, he had his chance. He was the closest Canadian to the lead when this thing got started on Sunday, and you see what Ryan Fox did. It's not that you couldn't go out and shoot a low score. Just couldn't quite happen for him until, because I believe he can do it one day. Until Mac Hughes wins this tournament, I'm forever going to bleed for him. 9 at Hamilton last year at this thing. That was his chance. Felt that way. Good putter. He's always going to have an opportunity, but yeah, just not the Sunday Mac wanted there.
No, and he was the closest in the mix when the day started, but yeah, it didn't go his way. But I really believe, like, this, you know, this is a different course than the other courses they play at, and you know, they're all in the mix. There will be another winner of the Canadian Open, and potentially even next year at this course, because it's another, you know, it's another year under the belt of playing there. Guys have seen it again. Guys are going to know how it plays. They're definitely going to be in the mix next year. I did want to quickly mention, I went on Thursday as well, Gunner. A little soggy there on Thursday, but I went out with the three Canadian group, and that was so cool. I'm imagining that was so cool for those guys, and they played great on Thursday. I think Pendrith finished 6, Taylor was 5, Mac Hughes was 4. Birdies flying in all over the course. Great gallery around them, even though it was the first day and it was rainy. So that was a nice touch by the tournament. I love when they really lean into the Canadiana, and they did, and they had those three together, and it was awesome for the gallery. So I just wanted to quickly mention that before we move on.
No, I'm happy you did mention that, because that's what it's important to not forget what this tournament is about, okay? Like, we now live in the post-Taylor times, PT. It works both ways, pre and post-Taylor. After Nick, before Nick, I don't know. We'll figure out the exact way we want to have the verbiage here. But now you can hope and dream on the winner, but it's not just a hope pie in the sky. But it's also about the other stuff. You know, one of the highlights I've had of this tournament of recent vintages, and, you know, some of it is just the happenstance of luck of the draw, where you are on a course, you know, when a thing is happening. I did make a bit of a point of being at 18 green the year it was at St. George's, because Mike Weir wasn't going to make the cut, and I wanted to see that ovation. And guess what? Like, I know Nick Taylor's won the Canadian Open now, and we think of it differently. That ovation's never going to stop being amazing for Mike Weir.
Nope.
Every time he gets it at this tournament. And it shouldn't stop being amazing, because it's so good to see him be able to do this. So I think it's important that, yeah, like, Canadians, go out, try to win the tournament. It is not a participation trophy anymore. But also, on the other side of things, like, still appreciate the moments that, yeah, those guys aren't going to get literally anywhere else other than if they have a tournament at Kent State, where all these guys seemingly go to school.
It's weird. I think back to this week, on Saturday afternoon, right at the end, where Nick Taylor makes 3 on 18. And it's such a great amphitheater there. And it's so loud. And it's great. It's like, these little moments that you get over the week are great. And it's so good when they're Canadian. So I loved it. Can we talk about the playoff now?
Yeah, here. Sam Burns, next thing on my notes. How dare you miss that putt? We love an exciting playoff, but I would have felt more excited about it if you just slammed the door shut when you had the chance. I cannot believe you missed that. U.S. Open, I imagine, is going to force him to get his sleep this week, but you want to talk about putts that keep you up at night. You know, Nick Taylor can go back and look at a putt on 14 or 17 or whatever it is. Sam Burns in the playoff right there should have been able to slam the door shut. He is a nails putter. Immelman iced him. I loved it.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that wasn't even the most offensive part of that for me. The putt was bad. Should have hit that putt. The other part that, you know, let's talk about keeping people up at night. Was it the third playoff hole where Ryan Fox left that putt short to win? Oh, my God. Speaking of keeping up at night, I can't believe Sam Burns didn't go for it on the second playoff hole. I don't know what he had in. The first one I understood because he barely cleared the bunkers and it was a long way in. But on the second playoff hole, I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to not get them mixed up. I think they were talking about it on the broadcast. I think it was like 260 cover downhill. Like, you know, these guys mash their fairway irons. It's like, or fairway woods. Are you trying to win a golf tournament here? Like, are you trying to lay up and play a wedge game? And then he ends up spinning it off the green, right? Like he you give himself an awkward little touch shot, try to blast it up there on the green and try to, you know, get it up. I was just really surprised by that decision. Like, he's a power player and he's a great putter. I understand all that, but just go for it, man. Like, win a golf tournament. I thought that was such a conservative, almost wussy move to do that. I was surprised he didn't go for it on the second playoff hole. That really offended me as a golf fan.
I was going to say, don't you be a wussy. Call him a wussy. It was a wussy move. I don't like it. Sam Burns is from a football family. They can't avoid talking about it. They're like, his dad was a coach, and really, they don't even look at him as an athlete in his family because they all play football. But yeah, and then, well, him, and the fact
okay,
the way
let's,
it ends.
Let's, can I make a football parallel?
Yes. Yes.
That's like, you know, running a draw on third and seven. Like, just throw a slant, man. Throw, like, get the yardage. I don't know. I think when you're trying to win, and I think it's been a while since he's won. Was it the last one when he outdueled, was it Scheffler he beat in the playoff? I forget what tournament that was at. Maybe Colonial? I don't know. Anyways, his last win was in a playoff against Scottie Scheffler. So it's been a while. Just, you're trying to win. Like, the worst thing is, you know, you poke it out right and it's out by the bunkers on the right. Like, I understand that you can go in the water, but hit it into the middle of the green and give yourself a two putt for a win. I don't know. I hated that. You're a professional golfer. You're trying to win a golf tournament. You're in a playoff against a guy that's, like, quote unquote, not as good as you. Put the pedal down. Put some pressure on him.
Hear, hear. You're almost right. His second to last win came in a playoff against Scottie Scheffler, but a playoff is a match play scenario, and the most recent win he had was a 6-5 thumping of Cam Young at the now defunct match play WGC.
Oh, we love that tourney.
Yeah, I know, our favorite. They had it at that awesome course in, what was it, Austin?
Yeah,
Dallas?
It was in Austin. Yeah. It was a really cool course.
Oh, I loved it. R.I.P. Yeah. Pour one out for that. But to your point, Sam Burns, two of your wins have come in a playoff, and the other basically came in a playoff because it was in match play.
Yeah.
Go do the thing. I know they had moved the pin, so, you know, not where he wanted to hit it.
No, but they hadn't moved the pin. They moved
No, but what I was going to say is, on the final playoff hole, he hits the shot that would have won him the playoff
if
he just hit it. Yeah. He hits it to that back left portion. If he hits that shot at any point in time in the playoff before then, he is, I was about to say putting on a jacket, but I don't know, it was a little chilly. But they're handing him a nice shiny trophy with our country's provincial flags all over it. So, yeah, no, I honestly, golf gods decided, like, hey, Sam Burns, you don't want it? We're going to take it from you. So there is a part of that that I think that's what happened. So I commend the golf gods for that one.
So I saw a couple people talking about how they were continuously playing 18 over and over, and they ended up changing the cup. So I kind of did a little digging on why they continued to play 18 as sort of the tournament thing. And it just, think about if you were on site this weekend, if you're listening to this, and you, Gunner, it would have gone 1-10. So think about what that would have looked like in terms of logistics of trying to get those golfers it would have gone over to 1 or 10, right? So from the 18th green, you got to go up a hill through like a real hospitality area. the amount of people that were crowded around there, and like, you know, security and the volunteers did a great job all week, but like trying to shepherd people all the way across there, back and forth, people running. It just, it made more sense to keep it on 18. It felt like a bit of a security risk, quite frankly, if you're trying to make people run all that distance back and forth. So that was the reason that they stuck with it. But I have to give a shout out. I did some digging on the guy who cut the hole part of the turf team, Ben Stenning. Got to give him a shout out. That was fabulous. And the crowd going nuts for him. Well, that's a lot of pressure. Like cutting a hole, I mean, it looks easy, but with that pressure, shout out to the kid. He crushed it. He looked great out there. I forget who it was in the broadcast. It was like, oh, is that Tommy Fleetwood cutting the hole? Because he had such fantastic lettuce. So I absolutely love that moment. Just so Canadian.
Okay, so I don't think this is the guy who cut the hole. I think this is the other guy who was out there. I saw like a tweet from somebody like, that's my son carrying the pin on 18. Yes. It's like, buddy, guy works at the turf team. He's never going to get a shout out in his life. I love that you, this is journalism on the golf show. Like, it just happened.
I'd sent one text to a very close friend, a.k.a. Brian Decker. comms at TBC.
That's awesome, though. I'm happy you did do the digging into that because, okay, flashback, story time. Remember the Nick Taylor playoff and when they just kept making a mess of 18 and they did say, all right, like maybe if we put it on a par three, somebody will make a two.
Yeah.
And we can go home. And do you remember the
greasy
mad dad and buddy?
Like, it was wet.
We have an inside the rope pass.
It was wet and people were flying all over the place and like slipping and sliding. I like the decision to stick with 18. It's a great finishing hole. They had to change the pin for old scaredy cat Burnsy to eventually go for it there. But I got it. Like, if, you know, Ryan Fox, great winner. Like, you know, I love having a good winner at this tournament. He's a great story. He's a good tour player. I got to give a shout. I mean, 3 wood of his life or whatever wood it was of his life. I think Dottie was like, this is majestic. One of them said it was majestic. When you hit a 3 wood that makes a professional golf broadcaster say the word majestic, you know it's good. Falls in there to whatever it was, 7 or 8 feet. Blows it by the way, on that putt. I'm like, Jesus, man. Like, get your speeds down. But really great win for Ryan Fox. And a guy I'm happy win. That's a good winner for our National Open. I'm happy with him.
It's an excellent winner. Great, just like from a broadcast perspective, that the soccer team was there taking it all in. Like, that's
were they
just
playing
hilarious.
Here? Were they playing here? What the hell was that?
Yeah, so I didn't. I care about Canada soccer when I'm supposed to. And,
well, yeah,
you know,
when they're not playing like Nations League or whatever the hell they're playing.
I
right
don't
now.
Know. There's some stuff going on at BMO. I only know about this because Daniele, who was filling in on mornings last week, was talking about it in a break.
Okay,
that's the only reason I knew about it.
Good insights there.
Hey, works out well. Works out well, buddy. For them, I love that visual of Fox just like leaning on the handle of the club, praying, just willing that thing to get to where it needed to. And I love the point you bring up about awesome winner. Like, man, we've had Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson win this thing. So everything else feels a little weird. This is, go back the before times. This is as good a winner as you could ask for. President's Cupper.
Yep.
This guy's going to want to come back. Like, he will be on the continent because of the U.S. Open every year for the foreseeable future. So, no, like, Burns would have been as well, but Ryan Fox is a great, great winner for this tournament, and I love them shouting out his dad. Finally figured out who that was. Rugby. Okay. That was nice to know.
Okay, and the last thing I'll say about our boy Ryan Fox, who is now our boy because he won a National Open, officially our boy, I am a incredibly fast player, Gunner, as you know, so are you. I even was like, take a second, buddy. Jesus Christ. Like, oh my God. I've never seen a professional player play faster. And I understand, like, we followed him at Hamilton when he was playing with Matt Hughes on the Sunday afternoon. I remember that. And he was like, it was jarring how quickly he was playing live. But you'd think in a playoff, you'd maybe slow it down one bit, but he really didn't. Like, they were laughing about it on the broadcast. Like, when Sam Burns was going down to hit like his 70-yard pitch, I think it was in the third playoff hole, they're like, Ryan Fox is going to get to his ball before Sam Burns gets to his ball. Like, it was really, really crazy how fast he was playing. And credit to him. That's his style. That's the way he does it. I really appreciate it. But I was even surprised at how fast he was playing. It was crazy.
No, you go back and we did follow him and Mac a bit at Hamilton last year, and there was a I mean, look, it's like it's professional golf. You're going to have to wait sometimes. It is what it is. And most guys are usually pretty ho-hum about it. But yeah. it was like watching like a cage fighter getting ready to
he
go
was
out
grumbling.
There. He was like, come on.
He was grumbling.
Let's go. Yeah. Let me muck this 3-wood up there. Let's call it a day.
Hard,
come on.
Too.
What are we doing, folks?
He hits it hard. Weird swing. Hits it hard. Hard.
You can decide what's the better comp for this. We both landed on Jon Rahm or former Sportsnet Friday Night the Fan, current Sportsnet in Calgary host, George Rusick. That's the two guys who he has modeled.
He gives me big-time Rusick vibes.
Power squat and let it eat, baby.
This is such a niche reference for like the five people who have played with George Rusick that's probably listening to this podcast.
We're trying to get big in Calgary. You didn't know that?
Okay. No, but power bot. He's got a big butt on him. He just hammers the ball. So good for him.
Yeah, very good for him. Okay, we've kind of touched on this already. TPC Toronto in general. It held up, folks.
Yeah.
Where was the minus 30?
No.
Everybody was worried about. And it was rainy. So what are we worried about here? I'm not going to pretend I didn't have some of these same concerns, but or at least same understanding of how people could get to the concern. I wasn't going to be worried what the final score finished at, but I think first things first, just if you would have told, you know, the people who were going to be irked by something in the 20s that you get a playoff and it ends at 18, I think that would have shocked a lot of people just first and foremost.
Yeah, I think they really stretched it out to a point where it was very hard on Sunday. Like some of those holes, I mean, you and I think it was it 17 that was the 572-yard par 4?
Yeah.
Like you're walking up there, you're looking, and you're like, that's a 4? Oh my God. Like it just felt really long and really hard. And good, like, we've been playing at TPC Toronto at Osprey Valley for a lot of years now, Gunner. Like I think back to when I first started going there and it was like down a dirt road and like the pro shop was a yurt, you know?
Nuts, right?
Like, and that honestly, like that doesn't feel like that long ago, really. And you go there now and it's just to have it be there. I mean, I can't imagine what it feels like for people who have worked there for a long time or are part of this process, because I felt a sense of pride. And I don't work there. I haven't, like, we've been involved with them. Clearly we've played there a ton. But it was a real, like, prideful moment for me being there on Sunday, seeing that 18th hole, seeing just the way that, like, just seeing all those people be so happy there meant a lot to me. Is that corny?
No, it's not, man. Like, think about the other places that, and like, you and I are lucky that we do get to touch these places, but we get to touch Hamilton and that they're like, okay, the
at an extreme arm's length, we get to touch Hamilton.
It's like, okay, come through for your media day. Don't look at anything and definitely don't touch anything. And you better take off your hat while we're doing this news conference, young man. That actually did happen to me at Hamilton once. And then. Right. Or, you know, like Oakdale, like we've been lucky to get out there a couple of times. Obviously, it's a historic place. It's not like TPC Toronto where we played. I mean, honestly, like go pull up the number you got in your Golf Canada app. Right. In terms of how many times we played there. It's just it is nuts to see. So this isn't even like Glen Abbey. Right. Like a place that like, yes, it had been played a bunch of times, but it's out like this is a different animal, and the fact that it's going to continue to be the home going forward, I love it. The fact that they, you know, they don't need to do this by any means. Obviously, they've made the North Course this incredible, you know, challenge, the championship course, but they have two other courses on the property. Like, if they ever felt like, yeah, let's get creative with routing, they could do that as well. So
absolutely.
Honestly, yeah, sense of pride is maybe a weird term to use for somebody who's just like, I've given them money and like they've given me golf, but I felt the exact same way, man. I really, really did.
And I felt a little bad for them on Thursday. Like, they got the biblical rains overnight. It was a bit of a logistics nightmare with a couple lots that they had to close because of all the rain, and I'm sure it was tough getting in and out at some points. But listen, it's their rookie year, boys. Like, it's the first time they've ever done this, and for, you know, everyone I talked to was having a fantastic time, and, you know, just people seemed happy. The layout was great. Lots of good spots to watch. Like, I think about 9 green was such a great spot to watch. Was it 11 green, the par 3 over the water?
Yeah.
With, like, the murder grass on the left hill there. Everybody was sitting up there having a great time. Everybody got to see Nick make a sick birdie there on the back nine. People were hooting and hollering. Lots of great vantage points. And listen, it can only go up from here. And it was a really good first year for them. So I'm just happy, very happy for everybody involved that saw their vision come to life this year. So really good. Good stuff for TPC Toronto. Really happy about it.
Hear, hear. I know we already kind of mentioned this, and we'll go to the U.S. Open after this, but I would just like to, because I want to be clear, like, I don't have it in me, so I would just like to give a hearty salute, handshake, and thank you to your service for all the Canadians wearing legitimate hockey tarps. And I'm not talking about the Timu Gretzky ones I saw.
Oh, my God, like, how many of those were there?
T-shirt. But the guys in, like, a Doug Waite signed jersey that probably weighs 42 pounds.
Yeah.
Good on you. You love the Oilers more than I love anything, or love being seen on TV, whatever it is. I didn't have it in me. Guys wearing a Binnington tarp we saw from the Four Nations.
Yeah.
There were so many good jerseys.
Not to pat myself on the back, but I snapped off a great joke at a kid wearing a Stutzel jersey that got his whole crew was chuckling and laughing at him. So it was really good wearing the Stutzel jersey. I said, carefully, don't trip over something or just fall down for no reason wearing that jersey. And his response, oh, come on. Oh, come on. Oh,
and
come
then we
on.
Couldn't escape him. He was just around. Yeah, he was all around. Day. Just but, like, God, there he is. I mean, part of it is it's like the only Stutzla jersey,
yes.
I think, in the entirety of the GTA. So good on him. Hey, it's your team. You can take the barbs. Good for you. That's all the compliments I'll be giving that guy. But I don't know what you'd have to pay me to walk around on a hot day at a golf tournament in a hockey tarp. So good for those guys.
Yeah, and I just, you know, this is one of our favorite things in general, but like seeing golf stuff in the wild. I thought the outfits were great, and I saw a lot of awesome, like, you know, it's a chance for men and women to show off their home club. You know, you wear your best hat from, you know, I saw a couple wearing a great pulpit, club, you know, outfit. You know, I see, you know, lots of stuff from like Scarborough and from Islington, just like everybody's stunting, right? They're like, we got to show off where we're from. I wore my Legacy Ridge hat when I went on Thursday. You just got to represent, and you show off, you wear your hockey jersey, you wear your hat, you wear your local club. It's just a coming together of people that love golf, and everybody's fired up and happy and crushing Cottage Springs. So I'm sad it's over, Gunner, because I love the Canadian Open, and I can't wait for next year already.
Yeah, don't be sad that it's over. Be excited that we're one day closer to next year's edition.
Correct.
I think that's the way you got to look at it. So, yeah, 2026 RBC Canadian Open back up at TPC Toronto. Maybe I'll just little advice for you, McKee.
Mm.
Don't try to sneak into the Turkish Airlines suite next time. I heard you almost got murdered.
I did not try to do that. I was told by a good friend of ours, C-Fry, sorry, Chris, that he's like, I'm like, oh, I was going to go buy some hats because I had to buy a hat for one of my buddies. I had to buy a couple of hats for myself and a sweater. Did some damage in the merch shop. Anyways, I was told by C-Fry, he's like, yeah, they got exclusive ones in the clubhouse. And I'm like, exclusive? Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'll walk over there. And I was just like strolling in like I was going to get. I got stopped by the security hard. They're like, you don't have a five on your thing. You're not coming in here. I'm like, but I also have a Yeti that I left there up last year. So I was going to be like, I'm actually just going in to grab my water bottle that I left last year. But I don't think they were going to have that either. So yeah, I got denied. And then I talked to our boy Decky and he's like, yeah, you need the Gucci pass to get in there, buddy.
Yeah.
So
Gucci,
I couldn't get in.
You are not.
No.
That's almost as good as the woman I saw trying to book lessons on Thursday at Hamilton last year pro shop. And the sweetest kid in the world who, like, obviously, you know, you gotta mind your P's and Q's with the members, just like very gently trying to suggest that, like, maybe not the time for it. So,
go back in a week, maybe?
Yeah, like, literally any day other than these four. Honestly, please, I beg of you. Awesome, awesome week. Awesome winner in Fox. Can't wait for it again. Can't wait for the great golf to continue. U.S. Open is coming up. We're mere moments away. We're going to have intrepid journalist Adam Stanley. He will have boots on the ground there for Sportsnet.
Let's go. Of course,
it's at Oakmont. Look, man, like the U.S. Open doesn't have the rota like it is with the Open, but they basically have the rota. And getting one of these classic, like, East Coast, or I guess, you know, they would quibble with that description, but, like, you know, northern country clubs, going to Oakmont, Church Pew Bunkers, it's going to be awesome. It is one of the courses that just on name alone gets you excited.
For sure. I am a little, I got my antennas up about how hard it's going to be. I can't lie to you. Like, it looks gorgeous, and I've been watching, you know, you're going to hate this, but watched a little bit of YouTube golf of, like, the media day they had there, and I watched Bob Does Sports play this golf course, so just to see what it looks like when it's, like, normal guys playing this course, and it looks insanely hard. Like, it's just one of those ones where it's like, yeah, imagine being a member at this course. You'd go somewhere else and be like, I am the best golfer of all time. I could play any golf course. It's kind of like Toronto Golf Club here in Toronto, where you know, it's a fist fight for the entire time. If you're a member there, you'd be such a great player. I don't know if I need to see a winning score in the pluses, Gunner. Is that a bad golf guy take? Because it feels like everyone's like, yeah, I want to see the carnage. I'm like, yeah, but I do want to see some birdies. Like, I do want to see some good shots. That's why I sit down on my couch on Sunday afternoon all day to see a couple good shots get hit. Is that fair or no?
No, it's totally fair. Par should be a challenge, but it shouldn't feel like a birdie, I think, is ultimately like where I land on this, right? It's like you want to see guys grinding to make their pars, mm-hmm. and then when the opportunity presents itself, absolutely have to take advantage of said opportunities.
Yeah.
But the opportunities have to present themselves.
Correct.
And when I see greens rolling at 16 and I see a par three,
what does that number even mean?
300 yards, I don't know that the opportunities are going to present
what themselves. Does 16 even mean? Like, is it like glass? Is it cement? Like, they're like, actually, the parking lot is the greens this week. We routed all 18 holes to the parking lot. Like, 16. Isn't 13 absurdly fast? Like, I don't know. I love a test of golf. And last year was at Pinehurst, and we don't need to get into what happened there for you, Gunner. But what was the winning score there? Like, 5-6 under? Like, that's fine. That's fine for me. Or maybe it was a little higher than that. I can't remember what the winning number was. But, like, it doesn't have to be in a huge fist fight the entire time. But this feels like it's going to be one of those. And you know, the rough is so thick. And like I said, 16 on the stimp on the greens. You're going to have some grumbling from these guys. And I know people like when the professional golfers get beat up a little bit. But maybe I'm just a little soft. But my tastes kind of have changed on this.
No, that's a fine take to have. I do not begrudge you it at all. I'm actually like really bothered by Google because I just went to type in 2024 U.S. Open and it started giving me tennis scores. And it's like, come on, you should know me better than that, Google. You know, was minus six. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That was what it finished at there. That's fine to be.
Yes, it's perfect, actually.
I could have. Now, the problem is with this is, like, if you give me my druthers, like, you just tell me, Brent Gunning, you get to pick the winning score. It's like, would I like it a touch lower? Sure. But the problem is with that is that you then just have to presume that weather doesn't exist. Like, if you want the U.S. Open to be as hard as they want to make this golf course, you basically have to play it in a dome. Because if you get any weather, you just lose it, right? Like, the idea of, like, you want to have it right on the edge. Well, you better hope there is a touch of rain, or you better hope the wind doesn't come up because if you have it on the edge and it gets more baked out,
just crunched.
Or you have the wind, like that's the thing that I worry about with this is that it feels like they toe the line and they have kind of lost golf courses in the past. Like there have been, it wasn't last year, but there have been iterations of this thing where they just kind of completely lose the plot and nobody can do anything with Phil putting a moving ball at Shinnecock.
That's one of my favorite golf moments ever. Where you're just like, you know what? I'm good here. I'm doing the amateur move. I'm just putting this bullet move. This is a great moment. And I mean, I know you have it in our rundown, but I'll just bring it up here while we're talking about the hard stuff. Like, why is a par 3 289 yards, Gunner? Can you answer me? Like, if I got to sit down with the USGA guys, I would say, is 250 not long enough? It's a par 3. I know everybody's playing it to the same par. Par is a social construct, as I've been wanting to hear. But like, come on. 250 is fine. 289 is absurd. That, like, you know, I know they're professional golfers. I know they all hit it far or whatever, but just make it, I don't know, maybe make it a short par 4 that changes it totally. I don't know. I just don't make your par 3s 290 yards. That would be my request for when I'm watching a golf tournament.
Yeah, here, man. What is this? The artist now known as Mount Nemo, when they put me up on that tee box up there and I just cry, and then they put a pond right in my right miss zone. It's like, okay, maybe that's just, you want to talk about self-serving. That was it right there.
Mount Nemo, yeah, I remember that. I haven't been there in a while. Was it Indian Wells before?
It was, yes, that's right. That was also, I was at Mount Nemo when Doug Ford canceled golf during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I just finished a round and it was like, well, boys, that was fun. And then Doug Ford's like, I hope it was. Never again. But anyways, I say that to say that I think you can challenge these guys. You got to pick one. Like, they're not going to have the green, that green rolling at 16. I understand they're going to try to keep them all the same speed, but you got to pick one. You can give them 289, I suppose, even though that's absurd for me. But then the greens can't be rolling at 16. Again, I want these guys to have an opportunity to do something. I don't want them to just get kicked in the teeth and, you know, a bogey is par as far as that the tournament effectively becomes here. So, no, I don't get it. I actually think that's a great question. I would love somebody at the USGA or Oakmont to explain it to me like I'm 5 years old and I don't understand any of this, because I think I have a pretty good handle on the game of golf. And then I see greens rolling at 16 along with, in concert with, a par three that is just shy of 300 yards. And I really wonder where I went awry. So, yeah,
you know,
no, that's a
you know what
great
they would
question.
Say? You know what they would say? Because we wanted to be incredibly stupid hard. That's what they would say. That would be their five. That would be their 5 year old explanation, because we want them to get beat up. We want it to be super hard, and we want a winning score in the plus numbers. That's what they would
say. So you mentioned you watched the Bob Does Sports video.
Yes.
I have seen a little bit of the Bryson video, and I am not one to come on here and, you know, crow about the content king. I will say that is incredible stuff. Just getting to watch, and it's one thing, like, you know, it'd be one thing if it was last year after he wins, and he's like, hey, let's go back and talk about how in the lead up to it, to do this, I think that is awesome stuff from Bryson. So whether it's for me, like if I get to sit down and watch the entirety of the length of the video, God, no. But getting to see a little insight into it, I do think that's awesome. So I also just want it to be stated on record that I at least once in my life said a positive thing about Bryson.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I have not watched it yet.
Okay.
But it's on my list. It's on my to-do watch. And listen, buddy, I'm a Bryson fan, but every so often when I watch his YouTube videos, there's at least 5 moments per video where I'm like, oh my God, shut up. Like, he's still a mega dork at heart.
Yeah.
But it's just, I really love the access that he gives to you, and like watching him try to break the course record at like random courses and all that stuff, because that's things you've talked about with your buddies. Like, how many times at Lakeview have we been like, I wonder what Rory would shoot if you brought him out here? It's just like answering a question that you've always kind of wanted to know. So I am definitely going to watch that video at some point this week before it starts. But yeah, I was just looking at the odds. He is the second favorite, Gunner.
I actually haven't pulled these up yet. Scheff favorite, I would imagine.
Scheffler at plus 280. Bryson DeChambeau at plus 750. Rory McIlroy 12-1. Rombo 12-1. And then it goes all the way down to Schauffele at 22-1. Morikawa 24-1. Auberg 27-1. Neiman 30-1. Fleetwood 32-1. If you want to just give me some money instead of betting on Tommy Fleetwood, it's going to give you the same results. So if you listen to the show and talk, like I'll take bets on that. I'll be your bookie for that one.
Oh, my God. Is his family doing that? Like, why would they even put that there?
He's in the top 10.
Gonna be nuts.
I guess if you're going to go algorithm on this, he hits a lot of fairways, right? Great ball striker, hits the ball straight. They would imagine that he's going to be playing in the short grass a lot, and it's not going to be as much about putting as it is in other years, I would imagine. Like, you're clearly going to have to hit putts to win the U.S. Open, don't get me wrong. But, like, getting it on the dance floor and two putting is going to be a massive win this week. So we'll see. But, yeah, like I said to all our Gulf Shore listeners, I am taking the money on Tommy Fleetwood for bets this week.
Yeah, I mean, they let people bet on Patrick Cantlay, and Lord knows he's never going to win one of these.
Yeah, it's true, too.
So it's true. It's true. Okay, who is the... Who is the best winner? You know my favorite questions. Best winner.
It's easy. Easy for me.
Is it easy? Because I thought it was easy, and I've kind of fluctuated on this. So give me your easy answer.
No, it's definitely Scheffler. I'm all in on – it's like we want the greatness now. We already got a major from him this year. He just won the PGA Championship. He wins this one, then we get to go into the Open talking about how, like, he's already got a chance to get the Grand Slam, and, like, he's really – I don't know. I just, at this point of his career, and, you know, I've been a fan of his since he came up, I really like this guy. And now that it's like entering into the same conversations as Tiger and Jack and all these guys, I'm rooting for big time greatness here. So I think for me, it's an easy answer. Like, well, I mean, who else are you going to go with? I mean, Rory, I guess, because you love Rory.
No, that's like, yes, for me personally.
Yes.
Like, if Brent Gunning gets to choose the winner, of course, I would like to choose Rory McIlroy or one of the Canadians. That would be my choice.
Well,
but no,
Canadians, of course, aside.
You know who the answer is?
Mm.
We need him back. It's John Rahm. We need John Rahm to show up in one of these majors or we're going to lose him. And I know he had a little flirtation at the Masters. John Rahm needs to win a major again. I cannot believe I'm the guy putting my hand up and saying you need it for a live guy. But I have missed having John Rahm in my life. My understanding is he is a top 10 machine over there on live, but I don't even know how many guys play in those events. So I don't know how good that is.
Neiman won his fourth this year.
Wow. Yeah. Good for him.
How rich is that guy? What a decision by him. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
pressure-free golf and just wins every week. How much do they get per win over there? It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that works because, like, no one's ever definitively said that, like, the money those guys got wasn't upfront payments for wins they may get later. I don't know exactly how all that works regardless. He's extremely rich. But I thought John Rahm traded away his golfing soul for all the money. And, like, hey, it's his money, his soul. He could do what he wants with both of those things. But to have him back, I actually think, honestly, like, yes, Scheffler would be incredibly exciting, but I don't know that it changes everything. Yes, the second one would be big. Bryson defending would be fun. McIlroy, again, would be fun. But I really think a re-entrant into the, like, upper tier of the golf world for Rahm would be excellent for the game. And I do not say that lightly because he plays on live, so I don't like to say good
things. And he was good at the PGA Championship too, right? He was flirting around with it. Yeah, so I think the odds are not great. If I'm looking at the book that I'm looking at right now, 12-1 on him is not a number that I love. But I, you know, maybe you look on Sunday or Saturday if he's in the mix, what number you could get for him there to see how it goes. But yeah, I like that answer. I'm in the the way I'm watching the NBA now, where it used to be like the dynasty league, where it was just like always dynasties.
Yep.
And now it's like I'm watching a game that feels like it's a Tuesday night in February when I'm watching the game. I want the greatness. I want the dominance. I want the guy that's there that everybody is sort of measured against, that Scottie Scheffler is. And it just feels like it's Scottie versus the field, right? And, you can break down all this stuff all you want, but, in my group chat this morning, shout out my boy Gordo. He's just like, because there's all the bets are flying around. It's Monday of a major. All the boys are posting their bets or whatever. And he's like, isn't Scotty just going to win? Isn't he going to be lurking on Saturday and then just make a couple birdies and win? I'm like, you know what, Gordo? Probably right. You're probably right. So I'm really excited for it. We're going to have some carnage. I love golf majors. We only have two left. But, I really think that I might just put a big number on Scotty.
There are worse wagers to make.
Thank you.
I'm not gonna talk you out of it. I will just say also, like, I get why they changed the calendar, but, like, fast forward a week from today and we just got one golf major left.
Feels quick.
I'm gonna be so sad.
Yeah, it's only June here. It just feels like they're all done
June.
So quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's gonna make me a little sad. I know. Ryder Cup year, it'll be fun, all that stuff.
That's great though. That's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's awesome. All right. Anything else from you? I think we sufficiently went to town on the RBC Canadian Open and then the other direction went to town on the U.S. Open. Anything else from you, bud?
I'm all good, buddy.
All right. Another edition of The Golf Show. We'll be back after the U.S. Open. Catch us wherever you get your pods.